Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton and Mark Halleck, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey.
You guys are the most opinionated guys that I... Hi.
Us?
It's Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton and Mark Halleck.
Thank you, Mark Halleck.
Hey, thank you.
So Kyle Bierman and you're Dan Hurst.
And I'm Dan Hurst so far.
So far. Well, Kyle Bierman, who helps manage this, and Trevin Wax and others, they say that some of our most listened to podcasts were actually the ones where we didn't have anything planned. We just sort of...
Okay, I wish you guys could just sometime just like be a fly on the wall when we're doing these things and hear what goes on between the actual podcast itself. Because these guys, I don't know if you've deduced this yet, but they have opinions.
I know.
And some of them are really quite challenging.
I know, but seriously, we were told that a lot of times Mark and I will do a podcast and Dan, and we'll take something from Tom Rainer. We'll say Tom Rainer's six reasons that Tom Rainer writes well. So something like that.
Yeah.
Tom Rainer, eight reasons why you should listen to Tom Rainer.
Yeah.
So we take these things and we do them.
Yeah.
And then once in a while, Mark and I will just sort of freelance something. And according to the people who follow these podcasts, they say the most listened to episodes are not the one where we talk about Tom Rainer or Chuck Lawless. But when we just freelance.
Okay, so let's freelance this.
I disagree. These are not nearly as good. But we will see. So this is not.
All right, let's talk about the things that you guys are really opinionated about.
Two things.
About.
We're going to do two things this podcast, two things the next one.
Oh, okay. You've already.
We
okay,
divided
you know.
It.
Oh, okay. All right.
So we're going to talk about Mark and I, our strong opinions on how to handle the Lord's Supper and how to handle baptism.
Okay. Oh, man.
Okay. Because we know.
Okay. Nobody has any thoughts on this stuff.
No, they don't.
Yeah. Now, we need to make a disclaimer here right up front. And that is, we're not saying that you should do it this way. Yeah, we are, I guess.
Yeah, we
to
are.
An
actually,
degree, but
what's
no,
the whole point of the podcast?
We just, okay.
I'm wasting my time if I'm not trying to convince
them. Of course, there's going to be a variety of opinions and perspectives on these things. But we felt like, you know what? We're going to just share some of our thoughts on this.
Yeah, we are. We have strong. Okay, so baptism and the Lord's Supper, the two ordinances. If you've ever been ordained as a Southern Baptist preacher, some deacon asks you, what are the two ordinances of the church?
By the way, why isn't washing feet an ordinance?
Well, it is in some denominations, just not in ours.
Okay, hold on. So let me go here. So right now, if you're not a Baptist, you're like, but those are sacraments.
No, they're ordinances for Baptists. We don't have
what do we mean by an
sacrament
ordinance?
Was a way of delivering grace. We don't believe grace is delivered through baptism or the Lord's Supper. It's something we observe. It's not something that is a deliverance of grace.
If you've ever wondered the difference between an ordinance and a sacrament, there you
That's
go.
That's pretty much it.
See, I thought an ordinance was
pretty
a
much
bomb.
It. By the way, do you notice what I'm wearing today? I'm wearing an old sweatshirt that says Seiko Watches, and I'm wearing some black jeans, and I haven't shaved my beard forever. I look really scraggly, and we're at Midwestern Seminary.
Yeah.
But we're
in the Spurgeon Library.
In the Spurgeon
You look like the Spurge today.
Spurge
a little
would
bit.
Never wear a sweatshirt like this. But here's the point of my story. So it's between classes. It's in the J term, winter term. Nobody, they don't have any classes right now. But across the hallway over here is the campus office for campus facilities. And some time ago, I left a table here. I used to have an office here. But when I moved out, I left a table, and I didn't really need it. And I thought, maybe I'll see if they have it. So I just walked over to campus operations, and I look like this. I look like I'm homeless. I truly do. And the guy didn't know me. And I said, hi, my name's Mark, and I think I left a table here when I'm in the office. He said... Who are you, and when did you have an office here? How does this happen? I said, I'm visiting faculty. He said, what's your name? I said, Mark Clifton. And you had a table here? I said, never mind. And he gave me his card. His name is Sky Singleton.
Oh, sure. You're going to Singleton now.
I am. And he told me, he said, well, when did you leave the table here? And I said, well, 2017.
That didn't help your case.
He said, it's probably gone.
Golly.
I still think he's like, I'm just a homeless man looking for some furniture. Okay, anyway, so we're going to talk today.
So here we are in the Spurgeon Library.
Yes.
And with opinions.
Yes. So, here, I'll take a picture, and Kyle can put this on the show notes of what I actually look like right now. I woke up this morning, and I thought, you know, this is not a video. I don't really care. When you get to be my age, you get to where you just don't care anymore. There you go. Hey, and there's Halleck.
Yeah.
And there's Dan. We'll put these pictures on, put them on the show notes. Okay. Baptism. Go for it, Halleck.
Back for baptism. Okay, so why don't you kick us off?
You really aren't prepared, are you? Okay.
What's your opinion?
Okay, well, here's one of the greatest changes I've seen in recent years in baptism is it is now celebratory. When we were young, Dan, baptism was not celebratory. It was solemn. Yeah. When my dad baptized, and normally we only baptized on Sunday nights because we would darken the sanctuary, mm-hmm. turn the lights down. The baptistry was always a hole in the wall, like a puppet theater, at the back of the sanctuary, behind the pulpit, and there would be a curtain. And what would happen is, my dad baptized, and the curtain would be closed until the candidate and my dad were situated. Then the curtain would open, and the organ would play very silently. And my dad would say the appropriate words and baptize the person, and then the person would exit the baptistry, and the next person would come and so forth. Nobody applauded. Nobody cheered. It was not a joyful time. Mm. I remember my dad, even when he baptized me, he said, just look straight forward. Don't look out at the crowd. Just look straight forward. You know, it's very solemn. And fortunately, in the last decades, that has completely changed. And today, baptism is seen as a very celebratory thing. People will clap. They'll applaud. Oftentimes, there'll be even a testimony of the person, mm-hmm. or the pastor will talk about the person. That's relatively new, and it is a great and wonderful change. Mm-hmm. So I want to encourage that. Also, I think as much as you can sometimes move out of that hole in the wall mm-hmm. and actually bring baptism closer to the people, if you've got a portable baptistry, put it on the platform. I know it's kind of a hassle perhaps with the water, but it just makes such more of a stronger impact. Mm-hmm. It seems and even better yet, what we would do at Warnell is we put our portable baptistry on the front lawn, mm-hmm. and we put a large banner out the week before we baptized and said, you know, public baptism, everyone invited. And after church was over, we'd all go out and stand on the public lawn, and we would baptize out where people walking down the street, across the street. The Episcopals, we always baptized. They had two services. The Episcopal Church is right across the street from us. We baptized between their two services. So as they were coming out of one service and going in another, they saw the Baptist going under the water. And many of them would walk over because they'd never seen an immersion baptism before.
Interesting.
And And we would let the kids come around the baptistry, put their hands in the water, experience it. Far more experience. Because baptism is an outward public symbol.
Yeah, that's right.
And so I think we need to be celebratory. Do it outside as much as you can. Do it in the public as much as you can.
I think we also – interesting – a couple thoughts on this. One is we're in this strange time. I know I see this in Denver a lot, where if people grew up in churches, they typically – many, if they grew up in an evangelical church, they may have grown up in a church that didn't downplay baptism but didn't emphasize baptism. You would be shocked how many Christians I meet who are now parents, have got kids, and they've never been baptized. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so what I would say is we've really leaned into that, and we talk a lot about baptism. I mean, our goal, we pray for a baptism every week as an opportunity to celebrate the Lord, to share the story of baptism, but also to teach on baptism every week. Where it's become optional in the church, that's a real problem. You know, and
it's
this
the first step of obedience.
Obedience to Jesus is getting baptized. Mm-hmm. And so what we found is, and I would say this practically, you're going to have to help people understand the importance of baptism. It used to be a given. You'd understand. Like, now, I'm a Christian. Why do I need to be baptized?
Exactly.
And if we're not saved by it, then what's the point?
Exactly. Like,
you see me?
Well, but part of the problem is that we treat baptism as a rites of passage. In other words, you get baptized to become a member of the church.
Right.
You know, and it's perceived that way by an awful lot of
people. And some people say, I don't want to be a member, so I'm not going to get baptized.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But that's a problem, is if you're going to be converted, you need to be a member of a local church.
Well, because baptism is, I mean, let's get theological for a second. I mean, this is the symbol of your entrance into the Church of Jesus Christ.
It is the first step in obedience.
It is the first step in obedience. You are now a part of the family
of the church.
Of God. Of the church.
Of the local church.
Of the local church. Yeah, and the universal.
Both, but local.
But local.
Yeah, and so I think it's really important. So let's go back and talk about, again, the imagery of it. I think it's appropriate. If you have not had anybody baptized in your church for 6 months or a year, go ahead and fill the baptistry.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe on one Sunday during the invocation or the invitation at the end or whatever, you go ahead and go, Pastor, go ahead and stand in that baptistry and give the benediction from inside the baptistry in the water and say, you know, we've not had anyone baptized here for 6 months or a year. Would you pray with me that before this year is out, we'll see a lost person come to know Jesus and this baptistry will be used. And we're going to keep this baptistry full of water till that happens. Mm-hmm. And maybe some of you in this room need to follow Christ in obedience and baptism. Maybe you were baptized as a baby in another church denomination.
Yep.
You've never joined this church.
Yep.
But you understand now that baptism by immersion is biblical and you talk about it.
I love that, Mark. No, I love it, man. Talk about it.
Talk about it. Fill the baptistry even if you don't use it.
And be excited about it. You know, we're at Spurgeon's Library, and Clifton and I were just looking at they got all this Spurgeon stuff. It's so cool.
It's because it's the Spurgeon
Library. That's right. I know. It's a Spurgeon guy. He's unbelievable.
They didn't have anything here.
But one of the things Spurgeon did at the Metropolitan Tabernacle where he pastored is they had this beautiful baptistry, and they kept the water in it all the time. So even if on Sundays there wasn't a baptism, it was this constant reminder and visual that again, not that you're saved by that water, but that water represents new life in Jesus.
And obedience.
And obedience to Christ in being baptized.
And it's membership in the church. It does represent that. It's being part of that community. So I would say, number one, yes, highlight it. Celebrate it. If you can, move it outside, move it to the front of the sanctuary. Sometimes you can't do that, I realize. But even if you have it up in the hole in the wall, it's okay, I think, to say, and I've done this at Warnell when we had it up in the old baptistry. I would say, hey, I like all the children. If children and maybe your parents, would you come and stand up here in the choir loft so you can get a closer look? Kids can't always see what's going on. Yeah. You want the children to see what's happening
in
baptism.
That's cool.
Right? And then you want to acknowledge any family members who are here of this person being baptized. Or if you know a Sunday school teacher that really had an influence on this person, have that Sunday school teacher stand up. Mm. Now, some of the recent trends are this. When Dan and I were young, the only person that did the baptism was the pastor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, it's altogether possible that you'll have a dad baptize his kids. You'll have a Sunday school teacher or a youth director baptize the kids. You'll have a children's director baptize those kids. How do you do that at your church?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. I would say this. We probably err on the side of pastors baptizing, but we have had some fathers baptize their kids.
Here's the bit of a slippery slope you get down.
Yeah, you can tell in my voice. I get a little nervous around this.
It's a slippery slope. Yeah. Once you let one dad baptize a kid, then you have a hard time not letting another dad, and maybe that other dad is not active in church.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're not even a member
Or
of
a
the
Christian.
Church, or not even sure they're a Christian.
Seriously,
you're not sure they're a Christian. They tell you they are.
Yep.
Then you kind of get down that slippery slope of that.
That's right.
I'm like you. I lean toward just letting the pastor do it. I think it is a pastoral duty. Mm-hmm. I think it's a shepherding duty.
Yep.
I think it highlights the role of the pastor.
Yep.
But there is a lot now where they'll let everybody, just, you know, a Sunday school teacher, a deacon, a parent baptize, a spouse, a husband baptize his wife.
Mm-hmm.
The scripture isn't clear on that.
Right.
Let's be very honest about that.
Yeah,
it's not clear on that.
Yep.
I'm clear on what I think.
Yeah.
Told you this was going to be opinionated.
But I'll tell you, you do need to think through that because
you
there's
going to
be implications for your whole church.
There's implications.
You,
that's right. There's implications. And you got to be – it's like anything else. There's some – you know, you may be okay this one time, but now you're setting a precedent that you're going to have – and if the precedent is the pastor does it, then you're pretty safe all the time. So that's the issue. The other thing is use it as an opportunity for evangelism. Ask the people who are being baptized to invite their friends and their family. And then and if you get their permission, and you probably will, have them film it. And then give them a clip of it so they can put it on a reel or on Instagram, and they can share it with their work friends, with their friends around the world, with their family around the world. What an opportunity now through social media for someone to share their baptism with all their – that really is public.
Yeah.
So even if you do it inside the church building up in the wall in the hole, if you video it, then that person can share that on social media with the whole world. And even put a link to your church there and some information
like
that.
The Sunday when you were at our church, did we have a baptism that day?
You did not the day I was
there.
We
didn't the day. Okay. No. Most Sundays we do, but the video has become a big thing. And it's one of the cool things to share with others. Like, you're a teenager, you come to Jesus, now you've got this cool little video to share your testimony. Yeah. We found that to be
I'll tell you something
really
along
powerful.
The same line. We have done had people send out invitations before their baptism to their friends and family. To it's just a great way for them to come and share the gospel with them in that kind of a setting.
So here's the deal. So when is a kid ready to be baptized?
When they're nine.
When they're 9 years old.
9 years old.
And here's why I bring it up.
I don't know. I just said that. No,
And here's why I bring it up. That one of the trends, we're talking about trends, that I see, and that is I see more and more churches in certain circles that have experienced, maybe in their own lives, but the baptism of children when they before they were really saved.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And almost going to the extreme of, we are not going to baptize anyone until they're 18 years old.
Yeah, I think that's
or 16
dangerous.
Years old.
I think that's extreme.
Yeah,
I think it's a really look. That's why we talked in an earlier podcast about how important it is that you are a shepherd to your people.
Mm-hmm.
You need to help. You need to know your people. You need to help your parents understand their children when they're ready.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hard call to make. And I'm talking of one who's been baptized twice,
mm-hmm.
at age 6 and about age 14.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my parents were reluctant to see me baptized at age 6, but I was absolutely adamant that I wanted to be a Christian and Jesus had saved me. And so they baptized me. And then guess what? About 12 or 13 years of age, after hearing all these sermons about hell again, I began to wonder, am I really saved?
Yeah.
I don't remember praying the prayer. I don't remember much of what happened that night. And so in order to get assurance of salvation, as we say, and I was baptized again. Looking back on it, I know now that I was converted at 6 and baptized at 6. But I don't remember it. It was not an experience as a 6-year-old I really understood or remembered.
Yep.
I baptized one of my grandsons at age 6, I think, And I can't even – they let me baptize him. You know, we just said the grandparents and parents, and then I baptized my son, my grandson. But I was a pastor, but not his pastor. I put him in the water. He was 6 years old, and I put my hand on his shoulder, and I lifted my hand, and I said, Jack Clifton? And he turned at me, and he goes, what? Okay, there you go. That is a tough one. I think we got to be very cautious about baptizing children that understand, but I think it's dangerous to wait to 18.
Yeah.
I just think that is one of those pastoral duties that it's not simple. And that's why it's good to have a group of pastors, elders, or deacons that can help you work through this.
Yep.
But err on the side, I would say, of waiting rather than too early.
Yeah, I've that's where I fall. I've many parents I've talked to. And what's part of it is I think there's – for some of these folks who maybe grew up Catholic and then they became – Baptists, there's still this fear of almost thought like,
they're not
well,
baptized yet.
If they're baptized, they're going to be saved.
I know.
Be okay.
They're not baptized.
And so it's addressing that and saying, guys, we got to get past that. That's not the issue here.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I can say a lot of parents, I said, let's wait a few, let's just wait some time. I'm not going to say this many years, but let's just keep watching and praying.
Right.
And do we see the fruit of the Spirit in his life? And is there affection for Jesus? And I've never had a parent say, boy, I wish we wouldn't have waited. Said, thank you. I'm glad we waited a few years. And those kids will often come back and say, Pastor, I wasn't ready when I was
young. I had an elder at Warnell whose daughter was made a profession of her faith and wanted to be baptized. And she was 8 or 10, something like that. And so he asked me and a couple of other elders to come to the house one Saturday morning and meet with her. And I'm thinking we're going just to talk about the logistics of baptism, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he talks to her, and he shares with her that he does not think she's ready to be baptized because even since her conversion, her behavior had not changed. She still did not obey her parents regularly. She did not care for her sisters as she should. Sometimes she said she brushed her teeth, but she did not. And he was very, very kind and generous, but he said, really, an evidence of salvation needs to be seen before baptism, and I've just not seen that in you. And I was like, whoa. For a dad. And he wasn't mean about it or anything.
Yeah.
You could tell it really convicted her. Well, after a while, he came back around. Mm-hmm. And he said, I really think she's ready now. And I think she understood what she needed to do. And
that's powerful.
It was powerful.
Yeah.
And so I think that's kind of you have to shepherding the heart of a child.
That's right. Yep.
Is really important. So baptism is an important part of who we are. Mm-hmm. Encourage it. Talk about it. Celebrate it. Man, it's and we need to do more with it than we do. I think sometimes we don't pay as much attention to it, given that our name is Baptist, as we should. And baptisms are down. And just to give you a little teaser out there, I got another podcast percolating in me we're going to do later today about why evangelism, why baptisms are down. Mm. I have the answer.
Okay.
Southern Baptist, Executive Committee, NAM Evangelism, you've just not been asking the right person.
Oh, boy.
I got the answer.
Clifton's got it.
In an upcoming podcast, if the Lord doesn't return first, I've got the answer. All right.
Or get you fired first.
One or the other.
All right. So this series is going to continue of Clifton and Halleck's opinions. And so is the next one going to be on Lord's Supper?
Yep.
Okay.
Lord's Supper.
All right. So we'll see you in the next podcast on Lord's Supper. I hope you'll join us. And by the way, we'd love to hear your opinions. I especially would love to hear your opinion or see your opinion. So feel free to send us a note. You can go on to our Facebook page there at Revitalize and Replant. You can leave a note there. There are other ways to connect with us. And if we had time, I'd give you both of their phone numbers, but we're out of time.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.